I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
A sprawling desert of green and blue stone as far as the eye can see. A patchwork of massive fingerprints frozen in time like an ocean of glass. It is a perilous journey to pass through its cold and unyielding valleys and crags. Yet in the very center of this expanse lies the jewel of the wastes itself. A floating archipelago, hanging far above a treacherous maw. A refugee haven, and a slice of paradise for those who survive the trek. You, lucky, privileged, haunted you, are among them. You are invited to experience a moment in the life of one Eladrin named Kars and discover what happened in the Malachite Wastes.
It's been a while since you've been in.
Yes, sorry about that. Life has been...
No apologies necessary.
Regardless, thank you for your understanding. I appreciate it.
No, of course. In our line of work, you know.
That I do. No need to finish that sentence.
Yeah, honestly, I'm surprised you haven't been in sooner, not in a... No negative connotations to that, just, you know... I know it's sometimes being the people who are unburdened too.
I find myself these days, how do I put this? It can be a bit of a challenge, focusing on myself. I know we're not supposed to get too tied up with the things our patients tell us. As you mentioned, the ones who are unburdened upon, it can be difficult to unburden oneself from all of that. Or at least it should be. I think.
Very interesting statement. You made this appointment quite urgently. And, first I want to just make sure that you're in a safe space, that you're safe in your mind, in your body right now. There's nothing that we have to worry about harm toward yourself or others.
No. Certainly not any risk of harm to myself or to anyone else around me. To your point, I think that feeling of safety, that feeling of comfortability, I think that's the problem. As paradoxical as that sounds, Doctor, I'm not feeling burdened. And that's the issue that I'm coming across. I'm not feeling as I mentioned, I don't feel the weight of what my patients tell me. I don't feel a lot anymore. And it's starting to concern me. I am not in any sort of risk of being overwhelmed by my emotions. It's as if the sea has gone dry. I feel... Perhaps calm is the wrong word. Numb? I feel nothing. And I've tried. I had a patient the other day who told me about something rather horrendous. They had lost somebody in spectacularly awful fashion. And it should have affected me. I should have been able to... connect with that, especially in this line of work, especially when they're coming to me and seeking understanding. The fact that all I can do is put on a mask for that understanding. Shouldn't that be terrifying?
I think that's a very good question, and I want to make sure that we're on the same page here, that your concern right now is that in your inundation with all that you have on your plate every day, with all of the emotions of others that they're putting on you, that you feel as though you no longer are affected by the magnitude of their grief.
Yes, I think that's a fairly succinct way to put it, but it's more than that. It's not just their grief. It's mine. I've lived for a very long time, Doctor. Over the course of my 348 years, there's so much of what my patients tell me that is familiar, that I've experienced directly. I've lost people in a myriad of different fashion. So why doesn't it hurt? That's the question I keep coming back to. Why can't I feel that loss anymore? And I say I'm concerned in a way that, logically, a person should be concerned about this, but the only feeling I have is exhaustion.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Your specialty, you focus on grief counseling specifically, am I wrong?
Yes, and emotional processing of previous traumas, focusing primarily on the emotional quotient of therapy, and talking people through those emotions. How fucked.
You're a planner.
Yes, I wasn't always, but in this most recent century, it seems to have come to pass that I am.
How long have you been in this vocation, Karst?
I want to say, let's see. I would say I first began my education in this line of employ around age 121, 122 maybe. And back then I felt a drive, a passion for it.
I don't want to in any way diminish these feelings.
Or lack thereof.
I suppose you, better than anyone else, could see through the language of it all.
Well, that's what makes it difficult, right? Is we tend to overanalyze our own treatment.
You would be surprised how many clients that have lived lives as extensive as yours, who have shared much the same, perhaps, affliction, we would say, about this particular, not even just a lack of regard. The logic is still there, the importance of it, the thing that drives the sense of indignance with ourselves.
Yes.
It all seems so small, doesn't it, when piled upon itself so greatly. I wonder about if the issue here is your lack of feeling, as you say.
Or, say, your self-judgment around that lack of feeling.
I think you're right. I think where this discomfort with my current emotional state comes from, I've seen so many of my kind fall for the same emotional trap. A life too long lived can become a life detached. You start to see things in a different way. Perspective of looking upon mortal lives as so fleeting and so small and little, as exactly as you put it. And I always hated that. I never wanted to lose that connection to my fellow beings.
You've become something that you once feared you might.
And that fear very quickly festered into hatred. The way that I see other Eladrin treat people, as if they are these grand ethereal beings, whose problems are not exactly the same as everyone else's, although just on a longer timeline. It sickens me. It disgusts me. I don't like it. And certainly it's not all of us, but it's enough.
You listen to yourself say these things over and over as though they aren't ourselves looking to buy time, don't we? This disdain for the Eladrin, so detached from mortality, perhaps. That might be a big word for it, but...
No, I actually think that's pretty spot on. A lot of them lose. A lot of us. Fuck.
Yeah?
A lot of us lose this idea, this concept of mortality, even though one day, eventually, we too will pass on.
Many moons from now, under significantly different circumstances than most. You know, it's not usually in my line of work to argue against empathy, and I
certainly don't want you to think that that's my intention.
No.
But we are, you and I, because of the way our lifespans differ, because of the way that we perceive time and the fleeting nature of things. There was a world once, perhaps, where we weren't all meant to be together as such. The world where Eladrins interacted with other beings so far gone in their own mortality that it didn't seem quite so significant, but that's not the reality that we live in, is it?
No, and I prefer this reality.
The separation of longevity is certainly not my intent of saying that, but I will say we are built in the same way that
when we were first created in this strange little place,
the body of a human was not meant to go faster than a human can run, and yet we do every day with magic and technology. And they go 10 times faster than a human was ever meant to go and feel sick and wonder why they feel sick. And it's because that's not what one's body was meant to do. Does that mean they shouldn't go 10 times faster than a human was meant to go? I don't think that's the case at all. When you come here to ask, when we talk about this lack of feeling, what do you hope to gain in this conversation today? Do you want a sudden appreciation for the brevity of life?
No, not necessarily. It is an appreciation that I hold. Again, logically, I can process all of this, right? And that's where a lot of my work is focused. To a degree, there is some benefit in not having these feelings, on being able to go home at the end of the day and not carry with me my patient's suffering, right? Being able to talk to them and look at their problems from a completely objective point of view offers them the new perspective of being able to confront those issues without the emotional quotient. But I fear maybe that's the emotion that I can feel now, is fear. I'm afraid. Doc, I am. And I'm sorry if any of this sounds incredibly condescending, but I'm terrified that one day, not being able to connect with these emotions is going to chase somebody away. Somebody who needs my help. Because I can come at them with all of the logic and reasoning and facts of the situation and try and get them to perceive that, but there are people, and I used to be one, who need something more. I'm afraid that I'm going to fail. That I'm going to fail not just one of my patients, but that I'm going to fail myself. It's been difficult to maintain any sort of personal relationship, feeling like this. Walking through life as if I'm just pretending. And I hate it. To answer your question, as far as what I'm looking to get out of today's session, Do you think somebody can become a sociopath? Not in a metaphorical sense, I mean literally.
We've seen instances of surgeries gone awry, instances of magic used improperly, the lack of soul thereof, I feel like, are more metaphysical thoughts.
What happens when one makes a deal with the devil? And
what is it that leaves their soul immediately? That absence of...
is what they've promised.
What is it that leaves a person who loses that so entirely?
This is the tricky part of patient confidentiality, isn't it? Not giving too many specifics. There was a patient of mine, a fawn, and they had made such a deal. And the debt of the deal came calling far sooner than they were expecting. They were going to propose to their partner, and when their soul was taken, those feelings of love and affection seemed to go with it. That bond that they had shared. We ended up coming to a solution. I won't get into the specifics, I wasn't directly involved. But as far as I understand, their partner was a descendant of an Aedra. And, as a divine being, they were furious. And as far as I understand, the situation was not resolved without violence, but everyone walked away satisfied in the end. That being said, in this discussion of souls and that loss of emotion, to clarify, I have not made any such a deal with any devils.
We both know how complicated that the heart and the brain and the soul as studies of medicine and magic still elude us in so many ways. And yet, do I believe that someone could become a sociopath? Yes. Do I believe a sociopath would be sitting here asking about how not to become a sociopath?
Probably not.
As much as fiction would like us to believe that a sociopath with good intentions would only kill people asked to, that's not how these things work, is it? Narcissists don't ask if they're narcissists. Sociopaths don't find concern with their lack of empathy. And not to say that one can't be pointed in a direction where they develop a need for such
to function in society in an appropriate way.
You wouldn't be sitting here speaking with what seems like amusement and affection about a client recovering their soul if you were a sociopath, Karst.
I do appreciate that. Thank you. Maybe I just needed to hear that.
You talk about your grief. You fear of letting yourself down, of not feeling those things that you had felt once more strongly?
Yeah. I worry sometimes how deep the mask goes, right? And at what point does... at what point does pretending become reality? And is that good enough?
Does fake it till you make it apply to... apply to the soul?
I think we both know that's a complicated answer. We both know how useful a tool that it can be. You look at yourself in the morning and you look in the mirror and you tell yourself, I'm a good person and I'm worthy of love. And it's a little easier to lie to oneself until you realize it's actually the truth. But what keeps us balanced, what keeps us human and reminds us of the significance of us and those around us is the people in our lives. Who are you sharing your grief with? When you remind yourself of those stories over and over, the diminished feeling in your head, who is asking more of you than the least painful version that you can give yourself?
I don't know that I am sharing. I'm, Sorry. I'm just so afraid that it's a lie. And I don't want to lie to my loved ones. Because what happens if I'm talking about this and... in some sense, maybe I am grieving. Maybe I am grieving who I used to be. But it's so difficult to talk about that because I'm terrified that if I say it out loud, it's going to become true and they're going to believe it. And if the person that I used to be, that I up until this point have thought that I was, has... over these centuries, died and passed on. If my soul has degraded to such a degree, then will they leave? And will I truly be as isolated and alone as I feel?
The finality, I think, that you who live so much longer... see the deaths of mortals with must seem terrifying. And yet,
how many of us are the people that we were when we began this? How many
versions of Karst have died to be reborn into something different?
Maybe that's it. I don't think that I fear mortality. I don't even think that I fear the ones that I loved mortality. I've lost plenty. And it's become... I don't know, death has become such a mundane part of my life. You live too long, you lose too much. But it's not that loss that's bothering me. Because people die. I'll die. One of these days, we will all return to the wastes. And however we are buried, be it burned and flung into the sky to drift, among the Malachite forever, whether it is buried within the grounds of our metropolis, however it happens. That's not the death that bothers me. It's when people choose to leave. And I'm worried that at some point I made a choice that I wasn't aware of. And it was me that chose to leave, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Even as I was saying it, I thought how silly and cliché and overly poetic I sound, as so many of us do.
And yet, here you are, speaking to me of loss, speaking to me of fear. These aren't foreign concepts to you, Karst.
No.
To choose an action means decisiveness, means decision. You have chosen to remove yourself from people. If that's the case, then that's something to speak on. And yet, what you're saying to me sounds like a lack of a choice.
A decision to
not invest, not connect. Decision to keep an arm's length. You speak of death so casually, and again,
there must be deaths that live on as wounds in you.
There are. It's a lot of talk of fear. I'm speaking very much of being afraid. I'm afraid that wounds, as you put it, which, thank you, I work very frequently in metaphors, so this is quite helpful. I fear that there's been so much loss that at some point all those wounds, as they healed, there wasn't much skin left. How much of it is me and how much of it is just the scar tissue? There's a saying that a patient of mine the other day brought to my attention. And I think that's what sparked a lot of this introspective thought. That was, grief is love persisting beyond death. And as I considered that, I looked at how I felt about some of the most important people in my life that are no longer with us. And there was nothing there. That's where the worry started. The worry that, will I develop sociopathy to an even greater degree as time goes on? As I experience more loss, will I lose that love? And will that love stop persisting? Because that's not fair. It's not fair to them. I want to remember. I want to grieve. I want to feel that pain. And I don't. What does that mean? Does that make me a absolute bastard? Because it sure sounds like it. I've met some absolute bastards. And the more time goes on, the more I see them in the mirror.
One would say those recollections give you nothing. You have no feeling at all about these people, or you just don't have the deep ache that you once did.
I was going to say yes to both. I don't know.
Tell me about them. One of these people that you've lost. That you don't feel like you love properly anymore.
Their name was Marcel. They were one of my best friends. Especially growing up in what would be considered our adolescence. Which means I was 75. It's so bizarre to think about. But yes, it was around that time. They were around the same developmental age. There was nothing deeper than friendship, but in that friendship, there was so much love. I remember it. I remember the laughter, the arguments, the sadness we shared. We went to school together. We studied and we procrastinated and at some point, one might have even called us delinquents, but it's a matter of perspective. They had this brilliant platinum hair. And their eyes were so blue. They had the complexion of caramel. And their smile was magnificent. And I loved them. As if they were my kin, I truly loved them. They died about 120 years ago, maybe longer. And I used to carry that life with me. And when my patient mentioned that saying about grief being love persisting, they were one of the first faces that came to mind. But beyond what I've described, I couldn't remember what they looked like. I couldn't remember what their voice sounded like. And I realized that so much of what I loved about them and about the time we spent together, it was as if I was reading the memories written on the page. And that hurt so much. It hurt. It really hurt. I'm sorry. I feel so stupid.
You are certainly not stupid. You have known many humans, yes?
Many. Many of them very good friends.
They'll reach 80, 90, 100 years old if the gods are kind.
In 100 years, Karsh, how little they can remember. Yet you speak to a man, 85, 90, does not recall that his wife
is long dead.
Yet speaks of her with such sweet kindness? You think that there is no longer love there?
Because that grief
is diminished with age?
It's a beautiful thought, a beautiful saying that grief is love continued, but it's not how grief works. We can't feel grief in a constant linear barrage, or how would any of us survive? How would someone your age survive it?
If every day you carried the agony of each life that mattered to you in the palm of your hand, so close to your heart, we would not survive it.
I just don't want to lose them. Not again. Because if I forget what their voice sounds like, if I forget what they look like beyond a few descriptors that could describe a million people. If I forget, then they die again.
What a terrible burden to put on yourself, Karst. Marcel. In all the love you have for her and had for her, do you think that she would concern herself with her legacy and your memory if it still brought you joy to think of her? You may have a long, long life, Karsh, but you are a person. You are not infallible. You are not indestructible.
The challenges of time.
The time itself is not your burden to bear. You write her name down. You write down the things that you love, and you cherish those things.
And you keep them forever.
It does not mean that you loved her less because you cannot perfectly recapture a moment where she is not here with you.
Yeah. I think you're right.
When you share those things, you talk about Marcille. I know Marcille, with the platinum blonde hair and her beautiful blue eyes and her magnificent smile.
And as long as I'm alive,
that memory that you've shared is alive with me as well. It's so hard to comb through the memories of pain, and it's even harder when we realize that those memories are less complete than we wish them to be. But to share them, to share those things with those who mean something to you,
that's how people stay alive. In whatever way we recall them.
Nobody's memory is a picture of perfect description of anyone. I don't think you're a sociopath.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. I do need to hear that. I suppose a sociopath wouldn't hate, maybe too strong of a word, but wouldn't dislike themselves this much.
I feel like most of the sociopaths that I've come across are surprisingly well-adjusted in terms of their feelings of self-worth, at least.
Touché.
Other things may be a little bit interpersonal skills that needed some adjustment, and
I don't deal with too many of them.
It's unusual, but I feel as though if you didn't know that I had in the past, you probably wouldn't have sought me out as your therapist.
It's very fair. I do suppose that makes sense. I don't feel all the way better. Obviously, I was going to say it's after a decent hiatus as well.
That'd be miraculous. I would have to really start upcharging people, I think.
Oh, if only.
It's not a... Gosh, it's not a mystery, but... Well, it is a mystery. It's a mystery that we live in a world where I can be halfway across this continent in the blink of an eye, and there's never been a quick fix for grief or heartbreak or pain. Not in the emotional sense, anyway. It's more complicated than science and more complicated than magic, and that's rather complicated, isn't it? You do yourself a disservice by placing labels of judgment on yourself.
Rather than asking
what you want to do to address this, if it's a concern for you. A bad person, a sociopath, someone who doesn't care about people, that is a label, that's something that's a designation and a resignment.
Mm.
If you are a sociopath, then you have no moral obligation or
self-obligation to change.
But if you are somebody who feels as though they've grown distant from their others and from their own emotions, that's a lot harder work, isn't it?
It is. It certainly is. I know we're nearing the end of the session, and we can continue this next time. I'll schedule something much sooner.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I won't bill you extra. Hit me.
No, it's quite all right. Professional courtesy, Malta. I'd rather pay you what you're worth. How do we explain these emotions, these fears of ego death, of emotional expiration, this reconciliation with grief? How am I
How do I process that, knowing that somewhere they're still out there? There are many afterlives. Souls we know exist by proxy of them being used as currency. When you asked me how I imagined Marcel would feel about all of this, how do I find comfort in that thought when I know she might be watching? Maybe that's where the fear of forgetting all of them comes from, is the knowledge that they might watch me forget.
Well, I suppose if you ever cross paths again, you'll be teased rather terribly.
I suppose that might be the case.
One goes on an adventure and they don't see one another for so long. We can't be blamed for what we can't see in front of us. If Marcel was a ghost hanging out with you every day and saying, hey, remember what I look like, then we might have a different story. Then you might want to be talking to perhaps a couples counselor, even, you know,
Exorcist. Hilariously enough, I do have a client that is a specter of sorts. Ah, that was a humbling experience, to be sure.
I can imagine. That is a unlifespan that is formidable. And we are not perfect beings. How do we intend to keep something precious? They tell stories, old tales of, you know, maidens locked in towers.
Hmm.
And those maidens are always so precious. Everybody always talks about them and how precious and wonderful they are. And yet very rarely do people go on and check on the health or safety or, you know, well-being of the maiden.
Indeed.
It's rather out of sight, out of mind, unless one is looking directly at it. It is easy. If you see that maiden 40 years later, she's not going to look like what you thought she did. You may have an idea in your mind of what somebody is, but people change and adventures change, and she is on a very different adventure than you are now. If she has the time to hang around, wondering if you've forgotten her or not, I feel like she would at least be comforted knowing how much you agonize over the idea of forgetting her.
You're probably right. I think you are. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. I think my heart's waking up again. I think I just needed to... I needed to know that it was asleep. My gods, is this what depression is?
Yeah, I think something like that, usually. It often takes those with a near immortal lifespan much longer to realize, as it takes, you know, quite a lot longer to establish a pattern.
But that might be for our next session.
You know, I'm happy to talk. Listen.
I can say casually from, you know,
one to another, you're probably depressed. But, you know, it's a lot easier to heal ourselves when we know what the problem is, isn't it?
That it is. That it is.
By the way, that is off the record. I'm not prescribing anything.
No, I'll talk to my psychiatrist about it.
Don't throw me under the bus. I didn't say nothing.
What did I say about professional courtesy?
See you again next week, maybe?
I think that sounds like a plan. Well, I thank you again, and I'll think on what you said. Maybe writing something down about Marcio as well as so many others.
I think that's a good idea, and I can start giving you homework next week if that helps.
You know, it's been a few decades. I think I can do with some homework.
Thank you for listening to this episode of What Happened to the Malachite Wastes. Each of our adventures are spontaneous tales from our guide, Isabella Z. Vergun, and our marvelous guest, Karst Arbelius, played by Patrick Keefe. A fantastic actor, model, and digital creator, Patrick is best known for The Writer's Room, a 7th C podcast, and his online persona as That Gray Gentleman, where he can be found on most social media platforms. This show is produced by Annalise Fisher. Our sound team is run by our audio lead, Nate Clayman, and Nicholas Kirshner as our additional dialogue editor. Our music was created and produced by our composer, Ryan Tucker. Our art team is led by our art director, Chris Gargoyle Pastures, and features our incredible artists, Caroline Gendron and Anna Renee Chavez. Our team would not be complete without the hard work of our social media manager, Frankie Gula, our Lord Keepers, Kyler Carter and Brandy Allaire, and our server warlock, Alex Glicka. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Malachite Wastes, or join us on the official Malachite Waste Discord server to see more of their amazing contributions. If you'd like to support our team and the work that they do, please consider subscribing to our Patreon, where you can find all kinds of cool bonus content, like Session Zeros, Patreon-exclusive interviews, and sketches, sneak peeks at upcoming arts, and so much more. You can find all of our incredible team's individual work linked in the episode description below.